Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show. Filling in for Brian today, Juan Manuel Benitez, the host of Pura Politica on New York One Noticias. When you think of energy bars, instant coffee, and that bread that curiously seems to still be good after a very long time on the kitchen counter, you're probably not seeing the connection between these three types of foods. So what is it? It's the United States military. It was and is heavily involved in developing and preserving foods like this that can last a long time and feed a lot of people. My next guest is here to more fully explain how the military is responsible for so much of the processed food lining the shelves of every grocery store. Anastasia Marx de Salcedo is a food writer and the author of the new book, Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. Hi, Anastasia. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Juan Manuel, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. And the book opens with you deciding to unpack your kids' lunches to see if they were healthy or not. What do you find?
Well, and this is a true story, which is that one day when I was packing my kids' lunches, and like all parents, I try and put sort of a balance of items, some of the things that I know that my kids love, like energy bars and cheesy crackers, and then some things that I think of as being more healthful, carrots and grapes, and the centerpiece, which is my quote-unquote homemade sandwich. So one day when I was doing this, I started thinking about that sandwich. And I said, geez, I kind of feel like I'm making something because I'm physically putting this together. But these things, the ingredients in my sandwich are really probably no fresher or healthier than the packaged items that I included. And that set me off on a journey of discovery. I started to do research on how shelf life, which is, you know, the length of time something can last, is achieved for each of the ingredients in the sandwich, the bread, the cheese, the deli meat, and even the mustard. And what happened is that I read deeply in the food science, and at the origins of two of those items, the bread and the packaged deli meat, I found an attribution to this obscure U.S. Army base, the Natick Soldier System Center.
That's interesting. And I wrote you went there, right? You went there, and what is it that you found?
I did, yes. So anyway, so my journey to this enormous question, what is the Army doing in our food? And so my book really tries to answer that question. Yes, I did go there. I went for a site visit, like several actually, and the Natick Center is the Natick Soldier System Center is one of 80 Department of Defense laboratories around the country, and it does research and development on all sorts of items. The Natick Center specializes in doing things that support the individual soldier. So that would be things like tents, body armor, textiles, and of course, combat rations. So I went to visit the Combat Feeding Directorate at the Natick Center. And it's a center that spent with about 300 employees, most of whom are actually civilians, food scientists, and food technologists. And there, they do a tremendous amount of work figuring out menu items for the combat ration. The combat rations are the meal ready to eat, the MRE, and they have another one that's called the first strike. And so they have a food lab, and they have a packaging lab, and a sensory evaluation lab, and then probably my favorite part of it, which is they test the durability with all these fun machines that drop the rations and squish the rations, and you put them in chambers at 100 degrees for several weeks.
And did they give you anything to eat or to taste over there?
They did, in fact, and I've actually tasted several rations. On one of my visits, I ate a sausage breakfast sandwich had been stored in a package at room temperature for 8 months. And that's something interesting. The Natick Center and the Army actually has a congressional mandate to provide foods that can be stored for up to 3 years at 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow. And obviously, this is really convenient. And all this pre-packed or processed food is really convenient for many parents in the house. But is it healthy? Are they really coming up with healthy options that can be stored and preserved for many, many months?
Well, that's exactly the question. And I have to say that after reading the book, my answer is that maybe sometimes, but often no. And the reason is this. The military, as I said, they have this goal of 3 years at 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And that means that the central values that they look for in funding and doing food science to support that are imperishability, durability, affordability, and palatability. And so among those values are not the two that I would argue are more important for us, which are long-term human health and environmental sustainability. Mm. So the food science that comes out of the Natick Center is supported by it really has those set of values at their core. And those are the set of values that we see if we go into the supermarket.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show. Sitting in for Brian today, Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One Noticias. Listeners, do you have any questions for my guest, Anastasia Marquez Salcedo, on how the military influences so much what we eat? Give us a call, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. And you were saying that maybe these options are not that healthy, but this is what I don't understand, because at the end of the day, you want the military to be eating healthy because these young men and women are protecting the country and are being put in situations that they might need to eat the healthiest food available out there.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a concern for the Army in developing these foods. But one thing that you have to think about is these are combat rations, and they're intended to be eaten for a relatively short period of time, not over the long term, day in and day out, which is pretty much how we consumers eat them.
And can you explain to us, Anastasia, because what's the bridge in between the a place like the Natick Center and then companies like Kraft or Kellogg? Where's the connection here?
Okay, this is the interesting thing, and this is the part where it sort of sounds like a conspiracy theory, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And that is, actually, the Combat Feeding Directorate has a mandate to get the science that it uses in combat rations into consumer food items. And the reason for that is military preparedness. And that's a policy, a longstanding policy that was put in place after World War II. And the idea was to maintain the military and the commercial sector that supplied it in a state of perpetual readiness, both so that we could instantly ramp up for, a global war, and also as a deterrent. And what that means in terms of the food industry is that the Combat Feeding Directorate needs to have the food industry be ready to be a supplier of rations. And so it wants to get the science that it uses in creating rations or the technology into the food company so that they're using it already in their own products. And maybe even those products are so close to the ration that they meet military specifications and might even be used to feed soldiers, which many commercial products are.
Anastasia, I think we have someone on the line with a question for you. It's Terry from Manhattan. Terry, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm just wondering what type of long-term impact a brief exposure to a meal ready to eat would have on a soldier's long-term health. It seems like this would be a very short time in a person's life that they'd be using this. And what kind of health is it really going to impact on these people?
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you. That's actually exactly the point I was trying to make, is that because for the military, having these values, the imperishability, durability, affordability, and palatability front and center is fine because soldiers are eating them presumably during a fairly short period. It's because the consumer products that are based on them are eaten, you know, year in, year out, that's where the long-term health issue becomes more important.
And we know, because you have it in the book, that the energy bars were created many, many, many years ago. Can you tell us how they came about?
Energy bars, in a certain way, they are the crown jewel of military food science, because they've been worked on in one form or another over a century. And they actually started out as a deliberately unpalatable chocolate bar. And the reason it was deliberately unpalatable is it was intended to serve as an emergency ration. And what the military didn't want is for soldiers to grab a delicious chocolate bar and say, hey, this is so good, I'm going to eat it now and I won't wait until, you know, dire circumstances. So it added things like oat flour and egg protein, and it made it unpleasant enough so that people wouldn't eat it right away. And that was eventually produced by Hershey during World War II, and it was called the D-ration.
Fascinating.
After that, after this, now you've picked what probably the most complex item, because I'm not kidding, it's almost a century of development, but I can go through quickly the other stages. If there's a brief period when the Army decided that it was going to serve soldiers just a menu of dehydrated bars as combat rations, and these bars were going to be every meal for, you know, eggs and macaroni and cheese and desserts would just be a bar, and with a topping of a laminated condiment. And some of these were sort of cereal bars and dessert bars. This actually was used in the space program on the first flights, and although it was transformed into cubes rather than bars. But unfortunately, because it was a dehydrated food, it actually subtracted moisture from the astronauts' mouths. And they were terrible. They hated them.
Wow.
So then the Army continued, however, with its freeze-drying program, and it supplied these products to NASA. But around the mid-60s, it kind of said, you know, this just isn't working out. Nobody really likes dehydrated foods, and we're going to have to find an alternative. And it found one in the dog food section at the supermarket. And that was the appearance of something called the Gaines Burger, which was a soft patty that could be stored at room temperature in regular packaging. And that was made possible through something called water activity and lowering water activity to a certain range. And I'm not going to talk about it. It's in the book. It's complicated. But then based on this whole new approach, the Natick Center funded a lot of additional research, and that debuted the first, it created this class of foods called intermediate moisture foods.
Any other examples, Anastasia, that when we go to the supermarket, that we should be aware?
Yes,
that
I'm going to go there. Actually, so the energy bar is going to be your primary example, but you also would have any bakery item that is soft and chewy at room temperature can last for months on your shelf. So a lot of, for example, a lot of cookies and snack foods that are moist and chewy would use this technology, as well as some multi-component things that sort of a sandwichy kind of a thing.
Hmm. We have Tracy from Brooklyn on the line. Tracy, good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you. I would just like to point out that if we humans would shift our value system and put health above war rather than war above health, we would have a different point of view about this. And baboons can do this. Robert Sapolsky has studied baboons, and a baboon troop lost their alpha males, and he found them 5 years later. He studies them every summer, and they no longer had a hierarchy society that was based on physical capacity to overpower one another. So if baboons can shift their value system, we can too.
Thank you, Tracy. That's a good point, Anastasia.
That's a very big question, and I would say that my book doesn't tackle that larger question of, you know, can we move away from war? And it's really looking at the impact of war and military preparedness on our food system. So, but I concede that, that's a hopeful possibility.
And from when we go to the supermarket, because it's really important for everybody, Anastasia, when we go there, from all those products that we know were developed for the military, which ones are the best options for our health? Is there something that you saw, that you know about, that we shouldn't be worried about, that it's healthy and it's filling and not that expensive?
Well, first of all, I want to just talk a little bit about the supermarket. And in the book, I have a supermarket tour. And at the end, I estimate that the supermarket would be half empty if we removed all the items with a military influence or origin. And I actually think that would be even a higher percentage. There are many things that I don't know about. So there's been a lot of different ways that the military funded food science may impact a product, including just something as simple as the packaging. One of the things that's on the face of it seems fairly healthy is the packaged salads and greens that come in plastic bags, and you can tear them open and just toss them in the bowl. Those are packaged using a technology called modified atmosphere packaging, which is something that the Navy developed with Whirlpool during the 1960s and used it to send lettuce and celery to Vietnam.
Wow. That's interesting. We have Alejandro. Alejandro in Kingsbridge in the Bronx. Do you have a question, Alejandro?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This is a fascinating conversation. I joined the military back in 94 as a 17-year-old, and I went to do my infantry training at Fort Benning, Georgia, as most, straight leg grunt infantry soldiers have done. And one of the things that I remember stuck with me, hearing from many colorful things coming out of the drill sergeant's mouths, was, yeah, you guys are going to get fed some MREs that were made in 79, so enjoy. And, I mean, that would give them a shelf life of at least 15 years. And, that always stuck with me, and I never was able to find out whether there was any truth to that. And I was wondering whether your guest could shed light on what's the real shelf life of an MRE and how does that process work?
Thank you, Alejandro.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I happen to have a couple of MREs at home, and I've been aging them, you know, sort of like a fine wine. So I should think about that. But I can say for the space program, actually, there's an even longer shelf life, which is 5 years. So there may be that the actual shelf life is in between those two. And the other thing that we have to think about is that this would be sort of like your expiration date. You know, that sometimes you can still eat products after the expiration date safely. It's just, you know, that some of the safety measures that we're taking to ensure that there's no growth of harmful microorganisms may start to be less effective.
Well, the also, book. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm just going to say that your book is Combat Ready Kitchen: How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. It was Anastasia Marquez Salcedo. Anastasia, and thank you so much for being with us today here on the Brian Lehrer Show. And we hope to wish you a lot of luck with that book.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to try to find out why New York Dominicans are so upset with Mayor Bill de Blasio.